Welcome to Hype, episode 193. Well, not quite 200 like we had planned, but close enough. Only 7 to go. My name is Selena, and I have Pam here with me to talk about Comic-Con 2018. Hi, Pam.
Hello, Selena.
Are we going to pretend that we're in the same room recording this?
Yeah, if only. It was kind of nice to be able to, like, I didn't have to text you if I had a question. You were just right there.
I know, it's like Google in real life.
Yeah,
it was really great. It was great to see you again. It was great to do fandom in person. That's always like really special, I think. Comic-Con is a wonderful time. I've been once before. Pam has been a bunch of times. And we did a lot of stuff at Comic-Con that we want to talk to you guys about. We had such a busy time that we did not actually have time to sit down and record a podcast about it. So we're doing it now that we're both home. After more or less long journeys, what we're going to do in this podcast is that we are going to recap our Comic-Con experiences. We went as press for hypeable.com, which of course Hype is for hypeable.com. So we're going to talk about the things we did there, share some stories that you probably won't see anywhere else. And then at the end of the show, we're just going to talk about the two of the biggest stories that came out of Comic-Con. We're going to pick one each. And you will have to wait and see what they are, although you can probably read it in the show notes, so it's fine. But I think you guys are probably going to find them very interesting. And then, like we just talked about before we started recording, because the news is going to pick up with the TCAs next week, we're just going to jump in to talking about the news regularly next week. And if there's anything else from Comic-Con that we don't cover in the show that you think you would really like us to talk about, then you can send in a request for that and we'll put it into the next show. Of course, as every week, we tell you how to contact us because we love hearing from you guys and we love hearing what you have to say in your comments and your suggestions for us. You can email us, hype@hypeable.com, and you can send us a tweet, which is @hypeablehype. We also have an Instagram @hypeablehype where I believe we posted some stuff from Comic-Con up there. Our Ready Player One story should be there at some point.
Oh yeah, soon. I will work on getting that up, but if you follow it along with us, during the weekend we were at Comic-Con, Selena and I did some Instagram storying from the Ready Player One experience, and we had a little too much fun with that.
Had so much fun. And there is like a picture on there of both of us in the same place at the same time. It's magic.
It's so funny because like I kind of, you know, we're not like the most active Instagram users, but we try and like upload whenever. And all of a sudden our Instagram started blowing up and I was like, why? And then I realized it's because you guys were all liking the picture of us together,
yes.
Which was so nice. We felt the love.
We did. Yes, we did. And speaking of feeling the love, we have here at the top of the show some winners to announce of the Patreon giveaway that we announced before Comic-Con. These three people will be receiving quote-unquote grab bags from Comic-Con. We picked up a bunch of interesting swag for you guys of various kinds, and Pam will be assembling some packages for you guys containing all of that cool stuff. Who won, Pam? Tell me.
Well, we have one winner, of course, from our regular show that was open to anybody that listens, and that winner is Mariah Pollock. I think that's how you pronounce your last name. We did recognize your Twitter handle. We know who you are. So we were happy that you won. So we'll be contacting you guys too, because I think we still have to contact you to get your addresses so we can mail you the fun things.
So this might be the first time you hear of it.
That's right. Yes. So Mariah is our winner for the regular show. And then we also had two winners for our Patreon. And those two winners are Shannon and Mercy. So thank you guys so much. We're so excited to send you guys the fun things. And if you're listening to this and you're like, wait, I didn't get an alert that I won, don't worry. It's because we have literally just gotten back from Comic-Con. We're trying to get back into the swing of everything. So we just haven't contacted you yet. But keep an eye out and you'll be getting an email from the Hype email address asking for your address, and then we'll be sending along your prizes shortly.
Yay! Thank you so much to everyone who participated, and we hope that you guys, the winners, will like the things that you get to receive. Okay, so without further ado, let's recap SDCC 2018. It started Wednesday of like last week. It feels like 10 years ago have passed already. First of all, Pam, do you feel this way like I did? Like everything, it was so long ago that Comic-Con happened.
Comic-Con is simultaneously like the longest week, but also the shortest week, and also the week that always feels so far away as soon as you get back to normal. Because it's,
yes,
it's like literally stepping into a different world.
Another world, yeah.
And especially this year with some of the new regulations, like for the first time ever, they blocked off the street that the convention center is on, so you could only go over if you had a pass or reason to be. It literally is like you're on an island. You're on a Comic-Con island, and the whole of downtown San Diego also kind of transforms into this different place. So it's kind of like we've come back from a journey to another world. It's really weird.
So weird. But we had a wonderful time. It went by super fast, and still every day for like a week. And we did so much cool stuff. So Wednesday was the first night of Comic-Con, and it was night. So basically we arrived, we both arrived Tuesday at our Airbnb, like walked around. I don't even remember what we did for most of the day, except we went to preview night. Oh, we just wrote some stuff, I think. Oh, I was writing my The 100 review. And then we went to preview night where they showed The 100, the episode that airs tonight when we're recording. This will go up tomorrow, Wednesday, so we can actually talk about The 100, the episode The Dark Year. And they also screened Manifest, which is a new pilot. I believe it's ABC, possibly. It stars Josh Dallas and a couple of other people. It was really cool. The pilot of Manifest was really, really cool. It was about a flight of people, including our main characters, one of whom is Josh Dallas, kind of has like some turbulence, and then the lights go out and then they come back on and everyone's like, phew, that was lucky. They land, and it turns out that 5 years have passed since they took off. So everyone they knew, everyone like thought they were dead. They come back into their lives, everything is different, and mysterious things start to happen. So it's like a reverse Lost in a way. Like, it has a lot of similarities to Lost, but it's also very, very much its own thing. I really liked Manifest. I thought it really grabbed me from the beginning, and I was like, I'm unsure how they're gonna keep making it interesting, but I think just for now, just based on the pilot alone, I was very intrigued. What did you think?
Oh, yeah. It was kind of really cool to be able to see that together, because I think when the pilot first started, we were both kind of a little unsure, because I think like a lot of times too with pilots, they tend to be a little bit cheesy right at the beginning. And then all of a sudden you're like kind of a little hooked with regards to the story. There's a little bit of a mystery. I think that the trailer kind of gives away that these people that are all in this flight, they've been changed because of like their disappearance and then their reappearance 5 years later. And I feel like it really sets it up really well. And I am really looking forward to checking out a few more episodes to see if I'm going to stick with it. But
yeah,
I think my biggest concern with it, because I remember hearing about it before we got to see the pilot at Comic-Con, was that it was going to be a little too much like Lost, you know, because Lost is like very similar in the sense that these people disappear and then at some point they reappear, but I didn't feel like it was a regurgitation of other shows similar to this that we've seen before. And I think it's really important for new shows to distinguish themselves amongst the pack, because we get a lot of new shows every year. Not all of them make the cut.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked having that. I probably wouldn't have seen it otherwise. So yeah, I'm glad I got to see it and get intrigued. So The 100 The Dark Year was the episode that aired. First of all, before even getting into it, I just have to say that Pam's face at one specific point during that episode, you had your hands over your mouth and you just looked really sick. And I thought that was amazing.
I was really sick. Can we talk about this now?
We can. I think we can. Like, spoilers for the next like 5 minutes if you haven't seen it yet.
Okay, cool. And now we're like in the clear because this will go up after it airs.
Yeah, Jason has really put fright in us. Like, we're so afraid.
Here's the thing. Like, Jason has put fright in Selena, and I am frightened of Selena ending our friendship because I do something wrong. So I have to follow all the rules, but also because we want to make sure that Hypeable still gets the access that, you know, we need for Selena to keep covering the show.
Yes.
So cannibalism is a thing, and I feel like everybody's squeamish about something, and I feel like cannibalism is what I get squeamish over. The same thing happened when they introduced cannibalism in The Walking Dead. It just makes my stomach churn. I don't know why. And also, like, it never looks like normal meat, so it looks even worse. Mm-hmm. Just like the stylistic choices they made. It's just like, it doesn't look like chicken.
Yeah.
It looks like a gelatinous mass, and it just really turned my stomach.
You would think that if they were going to go the cannibalism route, they would cook it. Like, they wouldn't actually eat it raw.
Right.
As, like, clearly cut out of a person and scrape the skin off. Like, this is, that's just really dumb planning.
It's, like, not freaking sushi.
Yeah, like, put some spice in there. Like mix it up with some algae. Like, I don't even know. There would have been ways.
At least, like, cook it. You could, like, yes, boil it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Do something with it.
Cook it into a pie, yeah, like, you yes know, Mrs. Lovett's meat
conceal
pies.
Conceal it
that's
somehow.
Like, yeah. Yeah, I was a little, like, grossed out, and I know that Selena was, like, she was kind of, like, chuckling, but also a little, like, worried I was going to throw up.
It is really funny because, like, I don't know, I don't get, like, as affected, I think, by these things, because I know a lot of people on Twitter now, everyone basically knew it was cannibalism, and everyone's saying, like, ooh, it's going to be so gross, I can't wait to be disgusted, to tell us, like, not to eat anything before the episode. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, it's fine. Like, it's gross. It's super disgusting. I just, like, I'm fine with it, but I still, you know, can... The worst thing is the noise. Like, the squishy sound it makes when they eat it. It really reminds me of the scene in Matilda where the woman is eating the cake. You know, like, it's very much like that, except obviously they're not, like, enthused about it like she is. But I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but...
I think I do, yes.
Yeah, it's like the same, like, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of mouth noises. There's, like, a lot of, yeah. But also, like, props to, I mean, specifically, like, Marie did such a great job of, her performance this season has been really great, but this episode in particular kind of really lets her show off her range and what she can do as an actress, and it's just, it's really well done. It's so good.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is also just, people have already said this on Twitter, this is such a good episode for Octavia, for Maria Avgropoulos, and for Abby, Paige Turco. Like, them two are just phenomenally good in this episode, and I just really appreciate it, because even though I think I would have liked to have had this episode a little earlier than it ended up coming in the season, because it's like the last one before the two-part finale, but what I do really appreciate about it is that this is the point when Octavia learns the power in taking away people's choice, and it's such a huge thing for Octavia, who's always been all about choice. And so in her first, in Red Queen, we saw that she learned how to use, like, death as a weapon, like, make death the enemy. And now she learns to control her people. She needs to take away their choice. And I feel like that explains so perfectly why she burnt down the farm in the previous episode, and why she's made the choices she's made as Blood Reyna. Like, you suddenly get the missing piece of the logic behind her reign style, you know? And I really appreciated that, because even though I kind of was on track with her the whole season, the burning the farm was such an extreme thing that I really liked that we got context for that and explanation for that. And for Abby, obviously, the fact that it was ultimately her that pushed Octavia to make that call, it explains so much.
Yeah, I think that you're totally right. It's a very interesting story choice to kind of embed that so far into the series, but in a strange way, it works for the story that they're telling this year.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
It's so fun to get, like, all of the little pieces and just to kind of, even if you kind of understand where these characters are coming from before they give you those missing slices, it's always kind of nice to see exactly how the writers have envisioned it. And it just kind of shows how well they plot out the season. And we've talked before about how there's really no time on the 100 because they're a mid-season premiere show and they have a shorter season. They don't get, like, the 20-episode orders like some of the other shows. They really don't have time to kind of drag things out, or they don't have the ability to go back and explain things. Like, if they miss the moment, they miss the moment. And so it just is a really good testament to the way that they plan out the arc.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll have a review up, obviously, where I go into all my thoughts on it. But I really, really liked this episode. I also like the present day stuff going on. The one scene that really also sticks out to me is the one with Clark and Maddie, where Maddie really calls Clark out on what she's doing and her decision making, and I think that was long overdue. So I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, and then I just wanted to
be a leader. Go on, sorry.
Oh no! As soon as you're done with 100, I just wanted to give everybody the air date for Manifest in case they were interested. Because
oh that'd yeah, be nice yeah. To- Yeah. Go for it.
Okay. So obviously you guys know that the 100 is airing on Tuesday, the day we're recording this. But if you're interested in checking out Manifest, it premieres on Monday, September 24th.
Yes. And okay, so moving on now, because I know not everyone here wants to hear about the 100. I don't know who you are, but I know you're there. No, I'm kidding. I know who you are. You've told us. It's fine. So we're on Thursday, the day after. I had a really packed day on Thursday, but I want to hear what Pam did first.
So I was in the panel room for YouTube Origin, which is a new series heading to the online video streaming platform. It's so funny because everybody that kind of follows news coming out of YouTube knows that YouTube has had YouTube Red for a while, and they've been doing YouTube Originals for a few years now. But from what I have noticed, like, it kind of started out as a way for like bigger YouTube creators to kind of bring more original programming to their audiences behind a paywall. But over the past few years, they've actually been kind of announcing and also premiering a lot of YouTube original programming that doesn't really have anything to do with YouTube. It's kind of becoming like a little Hulu or a little Amazon or a little Netflix. And YouTube Origin is another original show that's going to be coming to the platform. If you subscribe to it already, you'll get this soon. And if you don't, then it might entice you to subscribe. I wanted to cover this panel specifically because it stars two Harry Potter alums. And I thought that that would be really great for High People's audience, since so many of us are Harry Potter fans. So the pilot does star Tom Felton, who plays Draco Malfoy, and Natalia Tena, who plays Tonks. But a lot of you will also probably know her from Game of Thrones because she had a recurring role on that as well. It's one of the many, many, many sci-fi series that are coming down the pipeline that are based on a spaceship. But we saw the first 12 minutes of the episode in-house, and I thought that it was really well done. If you like your sci-fi with a slice of horror mixed in, then this is definitely going to be a series that you might want to keep an eye out for. It's really well done. It's aside from the horror and sci-fi aspect, it's a character study on why all of these people decided to board this ship for a new life, you know, out in deep space. But it also kind of dives back and forth between like the mystery and the horror that's going on the spaceship and into the past to kind of explain how these characters became the characters that we meet in the present day.
Cool. Did you just watch the pilot, or did you get to interview them as well?
They actually didn't have a press room. A lot of myself, at Comic-Con, I'm super busy because every show I cover also has a press room. And this year, a lot of my shows didn't have press rooms. And Origin was one of those shows that didn't have press opportunities available. So hopefully we'll be able to set something up with YouTube when the show is kind of closer to airing. They actually haven't released a premiere date for it yet. It's just, we know that it's coming sometime in the fall. But yeah, it seems really, really interesting. And I feel like with online streaming platforms, they have a little bit more say in terms of making sure that a show at least gets a full first season run.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, network shows where it's very possible this show might get canceled because it doesn't find its audience before the network decides to pull the plug. So if you're interested in the show, I would go check out the trailer. It's embedded in my panel write-up on hypeable.com. And then maybe if it seems like it's up your street, you could wait until the full season is out and then subscribe just for the month to YouTube Red to check it out.
Cool. So what I did on Thursday, I began my day really early with a Doctor Who press room at 9:30. Which was like an hour delay, or it wasn't really delayed because it was the pictures were being taken first, but it was not the press room. It was a
A press conference.
That's right. Yes, I do remember how to speak English, kind of. So the Doctor Who press conference where, you know, Jodie Whittaker and the new companions and the new showrunner, Chris Chibnall, was there. And they were basically, I would say people who've seen the main panel probably didn't miss much because it was a lot of the same information. There was a little bit of new stuff. They talked about the diversity behind the camera, adding writers of color and female directors to the new season of Doctor Who. They pretty much confirmed that there will be a Christmas special. They talked a little bit. I asked a question about the difference in calling the companions friends as opposed to calling them companions or assistants. And they kind of confirmed what we already kind of knew, which is that it reflects the modern sort of feel of Doctor Who. They talked a lot about how this season is going to be very standalone. You know, they want people to be able to jump in and experience Doctor Who for the first time, so there won't be that many callbacks to past stuff and anything like that. Jodie Whittaker talked about like her calling up David Tennant and getting some advice, and the new companions introduced their characters, and they talked about getting cast. It was really sweet. It feels great. I love, my favorite thing about everything that came out of Comic-Con for Doctor Who, aside from the new trailer, which was also very good, was just Jodie Whittaker's just such clear enthusiasm for her, for this, for getting cast, for being in the show, for getting to take this character on. That was amazing. And the panel was, again, like I said, a lot of repetition. They showed us a new sonic screwdriver, which is unfortunate looking. they showed us a trailer. They, you know, answered some fan questions. They were just so, they love the fans and they're so passionate about the show. And it was really good. I was sad that I didn't really get to speak to them, although I did meet Jodie Whittaker in a bathroom. So, you know, kind of got to speak with them. But it's great. Doctor Who, like this panel, like I was already excited, but now I am way more excited about a new season. I also did Night Flyers press room and panel. And the funny story about that actually is Night Flyers, it's a new series on Sci-Fi. It's from George R. R. Martin, but he's not like directly involved with it because of some conflict disputes, but he is kind of like very enthusiastic about it. It's like horror sci-fi in space. Some characters, including Owen Macken from Merlin, who we know, and who of course was the only person I did not get to interview in the press room, because that's how karma works. But it stars a bunch of really awesome actors like playing this group of scientists in space. They're hunting for alien life because their own planet is dying and they're hoping that aliens can somehow save them. And a lot of really, really creepy stuff starts to happen. And we actually did, as part of the panel, we got to see the first scene of the show, which is kind of a, without being too spoilery, a really terrible scenario with some of the main characters involved. And then at the end of that scene, it's sort of like, okay, now we're going to go back and see how they got there. So it's, yeah, and that's the first ever scene. So it's going to be really, 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 I'm super into this, even though I think it's going to be scary as hell. I think that it is going to be really good. At the panel, I guess this is kind of like a fun little behind the scenes Comic-Con story. I actually, like, press couldn't really get into the panel because they usually give out like passes so you can skip the line. And the line was huge because John Barrowman was right before. And I think people wanted Night Flyers as well because of George R. R. Martin, even though he wasn't there. Even though they kind of teased the, like, he was going to appear, and then they were like, actually, no, he's not coming. But so I basically got in by like sheer nerve, by just being like, yeah, no, I'm supposed to be in here. Like, it's, I'm press, I'm supposed to. And then they let me in and it was fine. So maybe I shouldn't have said that, but too late, I said it. And I got to see half of John Barrowman's panel, which was amazing. He is hilarious and so funny. And he was singing and flirting with the audience and talking about America and politics. And he actually also talked about Doctor Who and how great it is to have a female doctor. So that was really good. And when I got into the press room, it was really good that I'd been in the panel because none of the other journalists had managed to get in there. And they gave so much. I have a write-up that you guys should definitely go read if you're interested in Night Flyers, because I sum up basically everything they talked about in the panel and with the interviews from the press room as well. And so I had some context to sort of talk about the show and everyone's characters and their aims for the series, the way that they are paying homage to classic sci-fi and weaving in references everywhere for sci-fi and horror fans to appreciate, which is fantastic. So that was my day. Two panels and two press rooms. Cannot recommend. Having to sort of type it all up really fast and having to accept that the articles that go up aren't like pitch perfect because it has to be fast. And then in the evening, we went to some parties, which is a fun part of Comic-Con, I think. And that was the only day that I got to go to any fancy parties. I think you as well. So those were we went to the Den of Geek party. Den of Geek is a website, a wonderful website, not at all competitive with them. And they have we couldn't be anyway, because they're so much ahead of us. They had a magazine, a Comic-Con magazine, and that party was like to celebrate that magazine. What did we do at that party? It was also Pam's birthday, we should say, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And that's relevant because at this party, they had cake.
They did have cake. We just kind of like hung out, and we had, you know, my favorite thing about Comic-Con after hours, like Comic-Con after dark, when all of the panels are done, is that all these places have like themed drinks. So that's really fun because I'm really boring. And, you know, if I'm ever in a situation where drinking socially is a thing that's happening, I just want something really no frills, like a vodka soda. So it's really fun to kind of be like, oh yeah, I'll take the Captain America or whatever. You know what I mean? So that was really cool. They had, I think, what were the theme drinks? You had one that was
blue. The superhero and the super
villain. Yeah. So we each had, like, Selena had one and I had the other. And they were really strong, but really good. And then I had birthday cake, but it was masked as cheesecake because that's all they had at the party. But the important thing is that we had cake. So that was good. And then we got to just talk to some of the other reporters there, picked up some swag because it was also put out by, is it TOR Books or Tor Books?
Tor Books, yeah.
Tor Books was the co-sponsor. So everybody that went to the happy hour event got to take home a tote bag, and each tote bag had a different advanced reader copy in there, which is kind of cool. So Selena and I both got different books, and that's really fun.
Yes, very fun.
Yeah.
I think you have mine. I didn't
probably,
get it,
yeah. I think I think I brought both back just in case. Yes. We needed them and then for future things.
And then we both went to the Scholastic party as well. Scholastic has a yearly party. This year, the theme was 20 years of Harry Potter. All the tote bags were gone for that one.
Yeah, we were really actually upset about that because we only showed up about 30 minutes after the party started, and the tote bags were gone. And we were both really upset about that because every year, like, that I go to this thing, they always have tote bags out still for, like, you know, a few hours.
Yeah.
But this year we did get some really cool little enamel pins that say 20 years of Harry Potter on those. And I put that on my jean jacket already so I wouldn't lose it.
Yes. And shout out to every person that I have ever interacted with in my entire life who were present at this Scholastic party. Okay, slight exaggeration, but we met so many people at this party. We met Melissa Anelli, who you guys might know. She's on LeakyCon and Pottercast, and we've known her for years. Pam met an old friend that you haven't seen in like a decade.
Yeah, she actually works for, if any of you guys do go to any of Melissa's mischief management conventions, Abby is the one that makes sure that you all get into your panels and events on time. In there. She makes sure everything runs super smoothly. So if you go to GeekyCon, LeakyCon, Con of Thrones, Broadway Con, any of that stuff that Melissa and her team put on, she's the one you have to thank for, you know, speedy lines and all that stuff. She's great.
Yes. Yes. And we also met, it was so great. I got to meet Cass Morgan, who's the author of the 100 novels. She was there. She recognized me. I recognized her. We chatted. It was great. I got to meet a bunch of, we got to meet a bunch of publicists and authors. I had like a really sort of long, in-depth conversation with Scott Westerfield. Yes. Westerfeld, actually. I have it right here. It's on my bookshelf. And that was just like random about something. And I talked to some authors. I got some recommendations that I have to dig out and actually take a look at and maybe recommend on to you guys on the show, because it was really fun just to hear what publishers and authors are actually reading. I also got to attend a panel with some of them the day after. Cass and some of the people that were at the panel. What's his name? Andy Weir was there as well. It's pretty fun to sort of mingle with all of them and just talk about random things. And they all, for some reason, found it hilarious that I was from Denmark. But it's always a good conversation starter, I guess. So that was really fun. I had a great time. The Scholastic Party was much more sort of interesting than I think it was the last time we went, when we didn't really know anyone and just kind of stood in a corner and talked to each other.
I do kind of feel like every year that passes that I'm in the business, so to speak, like, I get to Comic-Con and I know more people. And and so, yeah, that's just, it's just kind of nice. It's kind of cool. Like, if it's not somebody that actually also does some kind of form of entertainment, like some kind of creator, it's like a publicist that recognizes you from like an email exchange something like that. So it's always just like really nice to get to see kind of the actual faces behind people's names.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, it feels like really good. Selena and I, you know, we both went to school for this. We've been doing this for a really long time now, specifically through Hypeable. We've been doing it for a really long time. And it's just nice to know that like our work is valued amongst the people that like we work regularly with. So
it's really nice
to get sappy, but it's just, it's very thankless at times, but we still love doing it. So that's why we do it. But it's also really nice to know that our work, you know, speaks to the people that create the things or help create the things. So
it is, it's so wonderful to have that experience when people are like, oh wow, like I know who you are and like I like what you do. And it's like, wow, okay, awesome. So Friday, what did you do Friday?
On Friday, I went to the Walking Dead panel. It's the always in Hall H. And it was a really big year for the Walking Dead because they have a brand new showrunner, which they do every once in a while. But more importantly, we heard right before the panel started, official confirmation was given that Andrew Lincoln is officially set to be leaving this coming year. And this is something that we already knew. It was rumored for a really long time, but usually the Walking Dead cast and crew like to let rumors lie and they don't really officially confirm anything. But Greg Nicotero and both Andrew Lincoln confirmed officially that Andrew was set to exit the series this coming season. So knowing that, it kind of added a different element to the panel, and it was really bittersweet, and it was just really nice to be in that room for that specifically. I you know, have spoken out about how I feel like this past season of The Walking Dead was not its strongest, but it's still a show that I've been following for a really long time, and it definitely marks the end of an era. So, yeah, it was just really nice to be there one last time, because Andrew Lincoln might come back to Comic-Con, but he most likely will never come back for The Walking Dead.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well,
that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
And you didn't get, that was also just a press conference, right? No interviews?
No, but I did get to ask a question at the press conference. So it's still like kind of an interview, but not. And that was really weird because there's like so many people in this room, you guys, for the bigger shows. Like I'm sure Selena can attest to this with Doctor Who. It's like over, you know, it's like between 50 to 70, if not more, reporters all crammed into this one room. And then all the actors sit up on a stage. And if you want to ask a question, you have to like stand up and like speak into a microphone. And it's just so weird. So I did get to ask a question there, and that was really fun. And then I missed my opportunity to get a picture with Andrew Lincoln, and I will regret this for the rest of my life.
I have a similar regret story to talk about for my Friday coverage too, actually. But yeah, I'm sure you will have other chances with Andrew Lincoln. Like you said, it's not like it's the last thing he's ever going to do.
Right, right. But the thing is, so here's the thing. Obviously, like we are lucky in that every once in a while we do get access to people. But I think that it's just, for me, I always feel weird about asking people for pictures, you know, and I don't like to do it. If I'm going to do it at all, I don't like to do it unless I really, really like the person, because I just kind of feel like it's not worth it to kind of, I hate to say like cheapen your status, but to me, it kind of feels that way because it's like you're there to do a job, and I just kind of feel like it's a little unprofessional, but that is you know, to each person's, I think each person has their own ethics, but in this,
each person has their own, and some people can get away with it more easily than others, I think.
I think so too. But I try not to, unless like I really enjoy the person, or if it like the opportunity presents itself, like if a publicist says like, oh, can we, like, do you want a picture? Then, you know, it's easier to say yes. But it, with this, it was just kind of like we were talking because he was asking me about the recording app I use for the iPhone. And then everybody started asking for pictures, and I probably could have just asked for one because everybody was doing it, and everybody was doing it because we all know that he's leaving. And then I just kind of like chickened out and then didn't move fast enough. And he just like left, you know, with the rest of the cast. But yeah, it's a really weird situation. I feel like, cause a lot of people ask me, I don't know if people ask you like, why don't you get more pictures with the people you interview and stuff like that? It's just cause I feel weird asking.
Yeah, I know. I hate asking. I hate taking pictures of myself. I hate sort of breaking the natural like flow of anything by being like, oh, like take a picture. I don't. It's funny because I don't mind when other people do it, but I hate doing it myself. So, I hardly ever. I always feel like I look back at things and I'm like, damn, I wish I had like a picture of that to prove it or to even remember it, because I forget things really easily.
Yeah, I feel the same way too. It's like, I feel unprofessional if I ask, if it doesn't like come up organically, but I would never think like other people are unprofessional for asking, you know? It's so weird. I don't know why I've like built this up in my head to be a thing, but it is. And so if you ever wanted to know why I don't really have pictures with people, that's why.
That's why. Yeah. Me as well. Yeah. I'm exactly the same. And actually, we should talk about the Ready Player One thing as well, but this kind of feeds well into my experience with The Passage, which is another new kind of end of the world show. This one on Fox. It stars Mark Paul Gosselaar and all of these names are like stuck together. But there's a bunch of actors in the show, and that makes sense because like Night Flyers, they're going to be killing off a bunch of characters, presumably, because it tracks the end of the world. It's about a government agency. There's some scientists that are discovering, like, looking for a cure for like all the world's ills, and instead they discover a virus that turns people into vampires, and so now they have to stop the spread of this virus. And spoiler alert, it will not go very well. It's based on a book by Justin Cronin called The Passage, which we actually got as a giveaway, and I'm very excited to read it because it seems amazing. And ultimately, at the heart of the story is the story of Mark Paul Gosselaar's character, who goes on the run with a little girl who kind of holds the cure, or the key to this cure, and they're on the run from this government agency. And we had the press room this time. The press room was before the panel, which was kind of a shame because we didn't, like, none of us really knew that much beyond what's in the book, and they didn't really want to talk about the book because they thought that was spoilery. So there were, and they've only filmed the pilot, so there wasn't much to talk about. But I think it went pretty well. You can see those videos up on Hypeable as well. And one of the people in the press room was Henry and Cusick from The 100. And like, no shame, this was the main reason why I wanted to do press for The Passage, because he was there. And he was like one of the only links I had to The 100 this weekend, because if you didn't know, The 100 didn't go. Bob Morley and Eliza Taylor went, but they only did like a select like video outlets and stuff. So I wanted to tie it to The 100 as much as possible. So I did the Passage. I did my video interviews with Ian at another table, another The 100 journalist, Sam Casey, shout out, over on Telltale TV. She was sitting. She was also very excited. She's a big fan of Ian and Kane on The 100. And so after The Passage, our table finished first, so I left because I had something else to do. And then I was like halfway out of the hotel, and I was like, oh no, Sam, I should go wait for her. So I come back. Sam comes out of the room, and she goes, oh, Ian was asking for you. And I go, yo, what? And so it turned out that he, like, we'd already kind of conversed a little bit on Twitter, but he actually knew both me and Sam, not Pam, that's you, Sam, who we were, and like knew of our writing and stuff like that. And he just wanted to like thank us for writing about the show, which I thought was such a stand-up thing to do. You know, that's not something I think a lot of actors would bother to do. So that, I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate him in general, because he's so clearly invested in the show. And he directed the episode Before the Dark Year as well. And he's really sort of into the show's importance. So I was like kind of bummed because I missed him, but then he was there. He was still in the area. So I got to say hi to him and I got to like shake his hand and we talked a little bit about the show and the episodes and our reviews and it was wonderful. And it was such a great experience. Me and Sam, oh my God, I can't. Sam Pam is we walked away with such a high, and then I did all the rest of the stuff I had to do that day. I went home, I got into bed, I lay down, I closed my eyes and I opened my eyes and I went, no, we should have gotten a picture. Like that would have been the perfect opportunity to get a picture, and I'm so bummed that we didn't, mostly because it would have been nice to sort of remember it, because it was like a really special thing, but like I did not even think of it until then. Like it had not even crossed my mind to get a picture, and it's just a kind of funny because that might have been like the best time to get a picture with Henry and Cusick, and we missed it. But a picture is not actually as important as actually getting to talk to somebody, so I'm not actually mad about it. It just kind of referred back to the story you just told. So
yeah, no, I totally get that. It's just funny. Like I you know, honestly,
it is.
It's a thing because we've made it a thing in our heads. So clearly we're cut from the same cloth, but I can guarantee you nobody else is thinking this much about this as we are.
No,
and nobody
would
remember if we asked or not later, you know?
Oh my, yeah, no, exactly. It's just funny. But like only at Comic-Con does stuff like this happen.
Oh,
it's wonderful.
Course.
We also got to see the Passage pilot, because, and that we kind of got tricked into watching it actually, because it was announced as a panel and we stood in line. Lindsay, one of my friends from the 100 fandom, she waited for me at a really weird Disney panel for like an hour while I like desperately got my Passage videos up, so that we could go to this panel, because I wanted to hear what they had to say and get more context. But then it ended up they showed the entire pilot and then they brought the actors on stage for like 5 minutes. And I felt so cheated that I was like kind of mad at the pilot, but actually it's a very good pilot. So it's not to like turn it down, or like it was just kind of frustrating because I should have spent that time writing up my article about it. But it was a very good pilot. It was very interesting. It has like a little bit of a The Last of Us vibe to it, and that the man that goes on the run with the girl. In the book, they track the end of the world and they do a couple of really significant time jumps. And it feels like the show will eventually get there too if it goes on long enough, which would be really interesting to watch. Also in terms of the cast will obviously change a lot over the course of those time jumps. So I'm very, very, very intrigued by this world and this take on the post-apocalyptic zombie vampire pandemic that breaks out. And the Ready Player One, I mean, do you want to just talk about that really briefly?
Yeah, sure. We were invited to go, well, let me back up a little bit. Every year, obviously, like the main panels happen at the convention center for Comic-Con, but if you ever go, it's worth it to spend some time checking out some of the activations that they have around downtown on site, because a lot of times they're super, super cool and really immersive. And it's just like such a fun, unique experience. And I've been to, I try and do one every year. And this year we were lucky enough to get invited to check out the Ready Player One experience right across the street from the convention center. And I was so happy that we ended up being able to do that on Friday morning before they even really opened. We were kind of one of the first groups to go in there. Oh my gosh, you guys know how much we love this book. And I feel like I talked about the movie as well. The movie was really well done. And I'm just so impressed by how good this activation was. It actually was comprised of two different escape rooms. And I didn't realize that everybody standing in line is only able to do one. So we were actually really lucky that they asked us if we could do both so that we could talk about our experience with you guys. It's so amazing that they were able to put this together, because this is not a standing exhibit. So this has already been dismantled because it was just something that was brought for Comic-Con. But the level of detail in this was really cool. The escape rooms were really fun, even though I was really scared to go in because I really thought they were going to jump scare me. But Selena promised she would protect me. Yeah, it was just really great. It was all based on pop culture trivia. We got to play in this like 80s arcade. And like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you were following along with us via Instagram stories, we also put up a bunch of stuff from our time in there on Friday as well. And then we're going to be putting that up in our highlights soon. So if you missed it, you can go back to Instagram and check out our adventure at the Ready Player One experience. But it was just so much fun.
Yes, so much fun. It was so much more fun than I thought. I was very skeptical, not because I thought it was scary, just because the Ready Player One came out last year. So I was like, why is this here? What is the point of this? But it was actually really, really cool. And we got like just the escape room part. I've never been in an escape room before. And I probably would not have escaped if not for Pam and the other people who actually knew the 80s. So, but it was fun. I liked looking through the stuff and looking for things and pretending I knew what I was looking for. So yeah, and so we got some awesome pictures out of that. So thank you again to the people that arranged it for inviting us. And Saturday, what did you do Saturday? Not my last day.
So this year for me at Comic-Con was kind of interesting because usually, like I said, if I sign up to cover a show, I know that I'm going to do one panel and one press room. So usually it involves a lot of writing. There's not a lot of time to like wait in line for things or actually go to other panels. And this year, because I really only had one show a day, and then a lot of my shows actually ended up not having press rooms, it freed up a lot of time. So because Selena was quite busy on Saturday, I decided I was going to try and go to the TV Fan Favorites panel that's put on every year by, I think it's TV Guide magazine does it, right?
TV Guide.
Yeah, so TV Guide. And the reason that we were kind of hoping somebody would end up at this panel is because it was the only panel presence, really, that The 100 had. Bob and Eliza were both on the Fan Favorites panel, as well as Tom Ellis, who plays Lucifer on Lucifer. So a lot of general interests were definitely represented. And I had a bit of extra time, so I decided to wait in line for this over at Indigo Ballroom, which is right next door to the convention center at the Hilton Bayfront. And I actually ended up accidentally getting into the Legacies panel, which is the upcoming original spinoff on the CW. That was kind of fun. I am still not really like 100% looking forward to it, but I do commend Julie Plec for creating a world that has received so much fan love and has such a passionate fan base. So it was just kind of like nice to see them get to do their thing, because like their fans are super active, and I have a lot of respect for creators and actors that merit that love. But the most exciting part about that panel for me is that they actually brought out the series showrunner and the two stars for Roswell, which is airing actually next year on the CW. So it was kind of like an impromptu 5-minute Roswell presentation with Karina Aldi McKenzie, Jenny Mason, and I think Nathan Parsons is the actor that's playing Max. So they actually showed up.
And he looks so much like Kyle. Yeah. And he looks so much like the original Kyle. It confused my eyes.
Yes, I totally agree. It's so funny. So Karina actually, she did some work with Julie Plec back in the day. So they're really good friends. And Julie Plec is like super supportive of Karina's new adventure. And also Julie Plec is like directing the pilot. So it made sense for them to kind of do something together. But the CW didn't bring any mid-season premiere shows to the convention this year, which is why The 100 didn't really have that big of a presence. So it was really fun to see that they still kind of figured out how to do something Roswell related. And we all got to see the trailer for it, which looks really, really good. It's out right now online. So if that's something you've been looking forward to, you can check out the trailer for the series. And yeah, it was just so fun to accidentally be in that room, because I would have never been there if I hadn't been lining up for something else. So
yeah, that's really cool. I'm so jealous. I almost got to go to the Roswell, the thing they did. They went outside the convention, but I couldn't go because I had my thing, which was my own panel that I'm going to talk about in a second. I also couldn't go to the Fan Favorites because I also had my own panel at that time. So I'm glad you got to go to both. And I've seen, like, the only thing I haven't seen, like, really caught up with at all during Comic-Con is the 100 stuff, because it all happened away from me. So I have no idea, like, what came out of that. But I see the fans being pretty happy. So that should, I had my favorite day was Saturday, because I not only did I have, like I said, my own panel, which was ridiculous, and it's not my panel, it wasn't about me, that sounds wrong to say, but I got to moderate a panel is what I'm trying to say, with a bunch of awesome, awesome, awesome people. But first, I got to do the Wynonna Earp stuff, which is, aside from The 100, my absolute favorite thing on television right now. And I went to the panel, I went to the press room, No, I did not go to the panel. I skipped the panel because the line was too long. But I went to the press room. And that, first of all, shout out to Syfy's press team. The most organized press room I've ever been in. Everybody got everybody. We got lots of time with everyone. There were like 8 or 9 different actors. And they rotated them between the table and showrunner Emily Andrews and the comics creator Beau Smith. And they were so efficient. And instead of doing the thing they usually do where like a press person will like tiptoe over and be like, okay guys, last question. So a woman just walked by going, time, time, and like terrified all of us. And you can hear this in the videos too. And every time she did it, she was right behind me and I like jumped a foot into the air. We started with Melanie Scrofano, who's the lead. She plays Winona. And she sat down with us and started just talking to the people that were there. And she thought we were starting. So we started talking to her way before the interview was supposed to begin. So we got to ask her lots of questions. And people kept arriving as we were asking. Also, shout out to the girl sitting next to me. I didn't catch her name, but she let me borrow her extra tripod. So my videos for this are extra good because of her kindness. And I had so much fun. I had some questions prepared, but the other people's questions kind of got me to ask more. And there weren't a lot of people at my table asking questions. So it was mainly like 3 of us that just kind of rotated between us. And we learned so much. We got so much insight into how Emily Andrews staffs her show, which is just interesting. Kat Barrel was talking about how they foster this positive energy on set by not hiring people that are in any way like an issue. You know, if anyone has had a bad experience with a person, they do not get hired on Winona Earp, which is kind of like extreme, but clearly effective. And Beau Smith talked a lot about the upcoming comic book. They talked about Way Hot. They talked about, I was like told by Twitter to ask a question about like the main love triangle potentially turning into like an OT3. And I asked it and Emily Anders loved it and thought it was great. So maybe that happens. And if that happens now, I'm going to assume partial credit for it. No, I'm not really. It was so great. It was so wonderful. Winona Earp cast, they were energetic. They were excited. They were happy. The show got renewed too for season 4 at Comic-Con as well. That was such a great thing. And right after that, I actually had to run over because the panel that I got asked to moderate, Sabrina Hutchinson is a wonderful PR person that does PR for Defiant PR. And I've interviewed Tree Adams, who's the composer for The 100, through her. And then they were setting up a panel about building a sci-fi world, music composing and more, with 6 distinguished composers or musicians working in film and TV and games. And she asked me to moderate it. And it was extremely stressful and such an honor. And I only knew Tree Adams, and I was familiar with another panelist, Gordy Hobb, because he does Battlefront 2, which is not only the game that I play with my nephew all the time, but also we've done an interview with him for Hyperbole. I didn't do it, but someone else did it. And so, but the other 4, I did not know. I was not familiar with them. I'd never spoken to them before. I had to just frantically Google them and figure out what they were about. I had to upload the Winona stuff before, so that I could be first, because that's the thing, when you have roundtables, there are other people there with the exact same footage as you, and if you don't get it up first, like the fans won't care about it. So that's like a stress factor as well. But I like ran over there, I met them all, I like jumped at them and was like, please tell me like what you want to talk about. And I wrote it all down, and I wrote it like in an order so that each person got a main question, and then that would lead into the next question. And I had to make sure that everyone had, you know, it's like when you're moderating a panel, like, and it's such a big group of people, you have to make sure that everyone gets to speak. So it's like always like keeping track of, well, who spoke last and who hasn't spoken in a while, and how do I naturally lead on from one question and lead that into the next one. And the thing I was like most terrified of was mixing them up, because like I knew who they were, I knew what their names were, I knew what they had done, and I knew their faces. But those 3 bits of information can easily get swapped around, especially when you're like stressed. So every time I introduced one of them, I was like terrified that they would be like, that's not, I didn't do that. That didn't happen. So I think we were okay. The other 4 people on the panel were Adam Lastuca. He does Travelers on Netflix, and he created like a really sort of special score for that, when he like goes into, he uses like unusual technologies to build like sci-fi, which is really cool. Nick Sewell scored The Crooked Man on Sci-Fi, which he had like a various approach to that as well, when he was like scoring like basically 2 different scores. One of them was a like a sci-fi, and the other was like a character built thing. And he talked a lot about character work, which was really, really cool. Joshua Mosley started working on games, and he collaborated with John Ottman on X-Men Apocalypse. And then finally, Gregory King is like a sound designer. He works on kind of a different area of music production for television. And he has worked on basically everything. He worked on The New Charmed. Looking him up really quickly because he's done so much. The Orville Night Flyers, which again I just done press for. Cosmos. They're very different. They're all within sci-fi, but they all have like a different subgenre. So it's about how like you bring those out. And so yeah, I talked to all of them. We had a panel. We had questions, audience questions. We made it with just as the time was up. Our panel was done. I think it went well. I still haven't written up the article, but I can't wait to actually hear what they said. Because I'm not sure how much I did pay attention, obviously, but you know, it all went by in a flash. Oh my gosh, that was ridiculous. And the room was packed and I didn't mess up and make them look bad. And that was the thing that was why I was so afraid. Cause I was like, I don't want to they've asked me to do this thing. It's a huge honor. These six men are so incredibly talented. And the last thing I would want to do would be go up there and make them look bad. So I'm just glad that that did not happen. And I can now say that I've moderating a panel at Comic-Con, which is kind of surreal still. And then after that, I technically had to finish Wynonna Earp, but I kind of put that off. Don't tell Andrew to go and have dinner with some friends I know from the 100 fandom. Joe Garfine, who does Cancer Gets Lost, that big charity. She's amazing. And Claire from MetaStation, which I've also guested on a couple of times. Sam and Brittany, who work for Telltale TV. Sam was the one who was also with Ian with me. And we had a lovely dinner and talked about fandom and talked about, you know, everything that you would talk about when you meet up in real life. And we also went and had drinks with some of the former The 100 writers. We went with Maya Houston, who was a writer's assistant last season, the year before, I believe. And she's now working on Arrow. So she moved on to Arrow, which obviously has a female showrunner now. And it's staffed mainly with women. And it's really, really cool. And one of the Benson sisters, Shauna Benson, who worked for The 100, and she just left after this season. They're working on other projects now. She joined us for a bit. I didn't get to speak to her that much because there were so many people, but it was still really, really nice of her to join us. And some other people stopped by along the way, and we just had such a blast. And again, getting to meet people you know in fandom in real life is such a treat because it so rarely happens. And I'm glad I did that, even though I then had to stay up until 2 a.m. to finish my Wynonna stuff. So yeah, so that was my Saturday. That was my favorite day.
I also did one more write-up for Hypeable on Saturday. Deadly Class is another, you know, sci-fi in general had a really big presence this year at Comic-Con. I'm not sure if you noticed, but definitely if you're listening back to this, you'll notice that a lot of our shows that we covered are actually sci-fi originals. And one that's coming down the pipeline, set to premiere sometime in 2019, is Deadly Class, which is, of course, an adaptation of the graphic novel of the same name. It follows a young teenager who gets kind of plucked off of the streets where he's living and ends up enrolling in this academy that basically exists to train the sons and daughters of mob bosses and gruesome murderers into the next wave of criminals, and it kind of picks up from there. So I've seen the trailer and I think that the trailer looks really, really fun. We actually wrote about it about a month ago or so on Hypeable. So if you want to check out the trailer for that, it's up on there. So I didn't get to go to the panel for this because it was just too impacted, but I did get to go to the press room, and it was just really fun to speak to the comic book writers for this who are heavily involved in the production of the show, and also to speak to the writers for this new series as well. And you can really tell that a lot of love has been put into this adaptation. Is the trend for a lot of shows right now. It's set in the 80s, so they're definitely feeding off of the nostalgia factor. But when I asked the showrunners what they were kind of hoping would set Deadly Class you know, apart from the rest of the shows that also kind of feed into the idea of nostalgia by setting themselves in other eras and decades, he said that it's a little grittier. So they're not shying away from the fact that while there was a lot of fun stuff that came out of the 80s in terms of like the late 80s is also kind of a time in America that was riddled in crime. So they kind of lean into that and are showing off the grittier sides of the real world on top of also kind of bringing in nostalgia through music. So I think that that sounds really cool. The trailer looks really great. It's also being executive produced by the Russo brothers. So definitely a show to keep an eye out for if you're into comic book adaptations.
That's really cool. Okay, so Saturday. I didn't have anything Saturday because I was done. Thank God. I was so exhausted and tired. But you did. What did you do?
On Saturday?
No, Sunday.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, yeah, after that, I didn't do anything. I was meant to go to the NBC was having a party at the Good Place, and I was so exhausted on Saturday that I did not go to that. And I feel like everybody is really mad at me for not going because that would have been really fun. But the good thing is that I was up bright and early on Sunday where I did have things to do. So I kicked the day off by going to Hall H, which is where I had like my last panel of the day. And I actually ended up going a little bit early and checking out the Supernatural panel. I've only seen a few seasons of this show. And obviously I know it's got a really passionate fan base. It's been around for a super, super long time, but it was really fun to go and see the cast up there because they're kind of notorious for just putting on a really great show, especially at Comic-Con. They're Comic-Con mainstays, and it was really fun to do that. We were standing over by the side stage, so we got a really good view of the cast coming in and out. Misha Collins, who we've had on this show before and is also very like politically active, brought a bunch of voter registration cards and encouraged everybody to register to vote. And I thought that that was really great because it's important, even if you work in entertainment, to speak out when you feel like it's necessary to speak out. And then I capped off my Comic-Con reporting extravaganza by staying in Hall H for the Riverdale panel. The last 2 years that Riverdale has made an appearance at Comic-Con, they've actually been in Ballroom 20, but this year they graduated up to the big Hall H, and it was really, really packed for Riverdale. Obviously, like, there's a lot of Supernatural fans, but it was just packed to the brim for this show because it is one of the most popular ones on the CW right now. And it was a really fun time. They actually didn't show the new trailer in there. They showed us like a sizzle reel that recapped last season. And then they released the actual trailer for season 3 online while the panel was happening. I'm not really sure why they decided to do that. But I thought that that was an interesting choice for sure. And also teased a lot about what's coming down the pipeline on the series. Specifically, there's going to be some new characters joining in season 3, including the second half of the Joneses. So Jughead's mom, Gladys, and his little sister, Jellybean, are both set to premiere around episode 8 or 9. So that's kind of exciting because we haven't seen them before. And they're also bringing in a few more characters from the comics into the mix. So that should be pretty fun. And yeah, it was just like a really fun panel to attend, and I didn't get into the press room for Riverdale, which is a sore spot for me, as Selena knows, but that's okay. There's always next year. And also what you said about just getting stories up fast is like super true, because I was actually able to publish the Riverdale write-up that I was working on about 5 minutes before the panel ended, and the story ended up getting pretty nice traction, which is always kind of nice when your story ranks a little higher than normal. Because, you know, everybody's got the same information. We're just kind of presenting it in a different way and trying to put our own spin on things. So it's always really a nice little rush when you get your stuff up quickly. Mm-hmm. And that was really nice. It was a nice way to like wrap up Comic-Con. And then I was just kind of able to not freak out about having to spend an hour trying to get out of, you know, Hall H with all the people moving here, there, and everywhere. And so that was really nice. It was a nice like way to end everything.
Yeah, that's awesome. So that was our Comic-Con experience. Did we leave anything out?
I don't think so. I think that's we didn't really talk about the con floor this year. It's kind of funny because I think my favorite thing to see whenever I go to Comic-Con is like the Walking Dead booth. because AMC always does like this big thing for The Walking Dead. And this year was a little lackluster for me. They're really pushing the new mobile game that they have out. So that was kind of like fun, I guess, if you're into mobile game playing. But usually they kind of transform their area into some kind of, you know, exterior that was used the year before on the show. And this year they didn't really do that. So that was kind of disappointing. But was there anything that stood out for you on the showroom floor? You did a little bit of walking around there the last day.
Nothing stood out. It was panic. It was horrible. It was hell. I hated it. There were a lot of cool things. Way too many cool things. And I did not stand in line for like anything this weekend because I didn't have time for it. So no, I hated it. I would never go to the con floor ever again if I could help it.
All right. Well, good to know. It's not good for people with like claustrophobia and the, like specifically for me, the thing I struggle with is that I tend to walk really fast and there's a lot of meandering.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that makes me a little bit anxious. You can't even move.
Like sometimes you just get stuck and you can't get out.
Yeah. Oh, I will say the Deadpool 2 had a really big presence at Comic-Con this year. And they had a really great booth that was like an animatronic band.
Yeah, I saw that. That was really cool.
That was really fun. And they also had like, I feel like honestly, like when you're talking about marketing, Deadpool consistently is probably, their marketing team is probably like one of the best I've ever seen. They also had toilet seat covers with Deadpool's face on them. Did you see these?
No, I did not see that.
They like when you use like public restrooms, obviously, like, you know, they have toilet seat covers so that you don't get germs on yourself. And so the ones for like, I guess Fox paid for all of them to be customized. They had Deadpool's face in the center. And then on the top, it said, "This is all Fox could afford." And it was kind of, I guess, must have been advertising the movie coming out on DVD. But I mean, kind of a little gross, but also they get super creative with their marketing strategy. And it's kind of super impressive to me that they're able to kind of raise the bar and think outside the box every time. It's clear they're having a lot of fun with that. So,
okay. So that was, I think, our wrap up of Comic-Con 2018. Great time. Lots of in-person interactions that were awesome. There were a couple of big news that broke that we had nothing to do with covering that we do want to spend a little bit of time on now. Why don't you kick it off with probably the biggest story to come out of Comic-Con?
Yes, during the WB presentation, which does happen every year, we got our first official trailer, full-length trailer for Fantastic Beasts 2, The Crimes of Grindelwald. And there's so much to unpack here. First and foremost, you know, the one thing that everybody's kind of been grappling with is this idea that Dumbledore is officially the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, because he was never that in the books. We always kind of knew he was a Transfiguration teacher, but in the movie he is the DADA teacher, so it's kind of nice to get confirmation of that. We got our first glimpse of Newt Bogart as a youngster attending Hogwarts, and that is that he fears most having to work at a desk. So that's kind of interesting. And probably most exciting is that we learned that when Dumbledore looks into the mirror of Erised, he does not in fact see a nice pair of socks. He actually sees Gellert Grindelwald. So there you go. I think those were like the big things. What did you think of this trailer?
I thought it was good. I thought it was a little bit like clunky. You know, like it almost felt like a lot of the stuff they included wasn't really meant for trailer. Like, I understand that the Newt flashback is kind of key to establishing his place and his attachment to Dumbledore, but the ridiculous scene just did not strike me as being particularly trailer worthy. Aside from that, I thought it was interesting. I liked all the stuff we got with Lestrange girl. I forget her first name.
Lita.
Lita Lestrange, that's right, yeah. And I like the stuff about, like, you know, at the end when Newt is like, you know, something like, she's like, "You're too good. You always see the good in the monsters." I was like, ooh.
I totally agree. I think, yeah, you're right. I get why, like, they're trying to drum up excitement for Hogwarts. So putting in a scene of Newt, of young Newt actually at Hogwarts with Dumbledore as his professor, like, I get why they wanted to do that. But it is kind of like, it doesn't really make sense in the context of things unless, like, Dumbledore had pulled a Remus and stood in front of him, and like the Bogart that appeared was Grindelwald, you know? Like, yeah. That would have made more sense. But I am excited, though, like, specifically for them to kind of dive into the idea of Dumbledore and Grindelwald's relationship a little bit more. I know that we're, like, we don't have very much hope because I think it's the director has come out and said that they're not really kind of diving into the Gala story, and that's fine. But I do think it's interesting that they chose to include the Mirror of Erised scene in there. And that's kind of like a new piece of information because, you know, we get the idea from the books that Harry knows that Dumbledore's lying when he talks about what appears in the mirror for him. And so it's kind of interesting to play around with that idea and kind of figure out if that's something that's changed or not and how it feeds into the context of the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do kind of like wonder how they're going to set everything up at the end, though, because in the trailer, Dumbledore keeps saying that he can't, like, move on Grindelwald. It has to be Newt. But we also know from the books that the reason Dumbledore is kind of solidified in history forever is because he defeats Grindelwald. So at some point, the power shift has to change. But right yeah. now, it still definitely feels very much like Newt's story and like Newt is the hero.
Yeah. So the second piece that came out of Comic-Con that was really interesting to me, and I know it's interesting to everybody, and I think I'm like in the minority on my opinion, which kind of makes me really sad, but we've had this conversation before on the show, before it was a reality. So Buffy the Vampire Slayer is going to be rebooted. This is now official. It's been kind of in the works for many years. There's been talk of a reboot. Now it's happening. Buffy is going to be black this time, which is one of the big differences. I'm sure there will be lots more differences. And it's, even though Joss Whedon is serving as executive producer on the series, it's unclear whether he's going to be the showrunner. It doesn't say, but it's being written by Monica Owusu-Breen, who is a woman of color who has worked on a lot of my absolute favorite shows. She's worked on Fringe. She's worked on Alias. She's worked on Lost. She's working on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, right now. She just did. Now she's going to be doing Buffy. There's a lot of opinions about this. The most general opinion I've seen is that people don't want a Buffy reboot. They want another Slayer that isn't Buffy. And I like, there's a lot of reasons why this argument is being made. There's some really good points being made about the fact that rebooting, like putting minorities in existing franchises or in existing roles kind of reduces their agency. And we should be focusing on making new roles for people of color and minorities, which is obviously absolutely valid. I think where I just obviously stand on this is that there absolutely should be room for both. You know, I would love an original Slayer story, but at the end of the day, you put two shows on television. One of them is called Buffy. The other one is called The Slayer. Which one's going to do better? Buffy. So there's room for, I think there should be room for everyone. At the end of the day, I'm super excited about this. I'm super excited what they do. I feel exactly like I did about Ghostbusters, like I feel about Charmed, which unfortunately doesn't look like it's very good. If it had been, that would have been amazing. If Buffy is good, I'm going to love it so much. And this negativity kind of like grates on me a little bit because it reminds me so much of the backlash towards Ghostbusters. And it's funny because the people I see being backlash about it are not the same people that would ever, like, they're doing it with good intentions, but at the same time, it just really gives me a war flashback to Ghostbusters. So I'm just sitting here in my bubble of positivity and letting myself be excited for it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that Buffy can be anything.
Yeah.
Because a Slayer can be anything. And I think it actually is going to add a really interesting new element to the story because the core idea of Buffy is, like, aside from being like a normal girl, is that she really is an outsider because of the Slayer abilities that she has. So why not center a story on a Buffy that not only is an outsider because she is a Slayer, but also because of, you know, her skin color, especially if they base it and like kind of do like a fish out of water thing like they're doing with All American, where she's, you know, maybe a minority in a predominantly whiter suburban area. It just kind of, I feel like, has the potential to add more to the story if you have a character that's already an other, but now is an other because of another reason. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing this a lot, actually. on the TV fan favorites panel that I attended on, what day was that? On Saturday? Mm-hmm. Kat Graham, who we know from the Vampire Diaries, was also on there because now she's voicing the first Black April in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated series. And she was talking about how important that is, like, not because it wouldn't have been nice to see an original character, but because it's also important for little girls to see that even if those characters don't look like them, they can see their reflections, and just especially for like younger girls of color that don't understand that, you know, they can relate to characters or they can be those characters even if those characters don't look like them. It's important to see those people on screen with the same names as, like, you know, the characters that they grew up with. So I think mm-hmm. that the idea of this has the potential to do a world of good, and I do expect it to do a world of good. And it's also exciting because, you know, just because Buffy's being remade, like, doesn't mean we have to have the same story. It's just, you know, I fully intend for it to be a different story. So, yeah, I think that this is going to be great. I have no, like, hesitations for this, especially knowing specifically that they've hired a female showrunner of color.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already on the right track.
Yes.
No disrespect to Joss, but it's just, he's not the right voice for this iteration.
Exactly. So. But also, obviously, I'm not an authority on this at all. I don't have, like, it's not, all I'm saying, I think, is that where was this outrage for Sabrina? You know? Like, I, it's a little fishy to me. It honestly is a little fishy to me that people are so hostile towards this.
Mm-hmm.
And if the hostility stems from the fact that, well, Sabrina can be rebooted because Sabrina is still white, but Buffy can't be rebooted as a Black woman because that's, like, undermining the Black woman, that's a fair argument. But I think it's also fair to say, why are you not just shutting a Black woman out of this property? Is that also not what's happening? You know, it's like, it's so weird because both sides are valid. Yeah. But
I mean, it feels that way a little bit because, but the thing is, like, that just proves that people are never going to be happy because they're remaking Charmed now with a new set of Charmed ones and people are not pleased, you know? They're like, oh, but, like, we're remaking Buffy and it's still going to be called Buffy and people are unpleased, you know?
Yeah. I think I'm also looking at it at a place where, like, Buffy is the brand. That's going to help the show sell. That's a good, I mean, in my opinion, that's a good thing. And it's also not the first time Buffy's been rebooted. The TV show was a reboot. You know, the TV show was a reboot of the original movie. Both of those women were white women with blonde hair. Now it's being done a third time, and it's going to be a woman of color. I think that's great. And I also don't think, if this Buffy show does well, there will be new characters. I'm sure there will be other people of color on the show that aren't based on original, like the old characters. You know, I'm sure there will be more people that are queer. There will be more diversity in general. As a vehicle, just like the new Spider-Man, just like the new Batman, just like the new Superman, and just like the new Star Wars, like, there'll be vehicles for telling new stories and explore the world. And I've seen some really weird arguments about people who assume it's going to be like follow the exact same story beats.
Yeah, that, like, and I'm like, never that's not how happens. It works. Yeah,
I think it's going to take, who knows? I was also excited for Charmed. That didn't turn out well. I was excited for Ghostbusters. That turned out great, in my opinion. So it's like, you never know what's going to happen with the actual show. But I love Buffy so much more than anything. And I am so excited to see it in a new form for a new era. You know, I'm so excited for people hopefully to, like, tune into it and get the spirit of Buffy. As indeed, like, they're saying, you know, Monica, the writer and everyone, Joss, they're all saying that that's why they're doing this, to bring Buffy and the values of Buffy to a new generation. You know, high school is going to be a stand-in for your inner demons. That's the other way around. The demons are going to be a stand-in for, like, the problems you face in high school. It's going to be friendship. There's going to be family. There's going to be growing up. There's going to be all that stuff, and it's going to be told through a lens that I think a lot of people who didn't watch the original Buffy and are going back to it now, as indeed we have some experience with, and right. not, like, sort of understanding that it was made in the context of the 90s and not in the context of 2018. I feel like if it's done well, there's so much importance in Buffy, like the concept of Buffy. And I think at the end of the day, I just see the Buffy as a brand. I see the name, the word Buffy is like, it's the concept. It's not the specific Sarah Michelle Gellar character or Christy Swanson right, character. Right. So I think for me, I don't share the concern that it's going to be like that it's going to be too similar. I think I don't think anywhere they say that it's going to be the same story. I think actually they say somewhere in the press release that it'll be contemporary. It'll build on the mythology of the original. It'll be richly diverse. So yeah, not just Buffy. Some aspect of the series will be the same, but others will be different. So I'm on board. To sum up.
Yeah, me too. I think that, you know, we're just kind of going around in circles now, but like to wrap it up,
yeah.
It's just really exciting that it's happening. It's great that, you know, they've already taken a great first step with an awesome showrunner, and everybody I think needs to cool their jets and see how they feel after we get a little bit more information on this, because right mm-hmm. now all we have is like bare bones ideas and the knowledge that it's happening. So
yes,
let's just like try and welcome it with open arms. And if it's bad for other reasons, we can be critical of it then.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. All right. So that's the end of the show. What a way to end. Either we just made people happy or we just made them really angry. Either way, we would love to hear from you, because this is going to be an ongoing debate, and everyone deserves to have their voices heard. So if you want to talk to us about anything we did at Comic-Con, if you want to talk to us about Fantastic Beasts or Buffy, and as we said at the top of the show, if there's anything, any news story that you would really like us to include in next week's show that we didn't get to this week, please send that in to us. You can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. And then we'll be back next week to talk about the news as always. So have a great week, everyone, and hope you guys are doing well. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye.